You're listening to Around It About. Like many young married couples, Santosh and Susan Matthews were delighted when Susan became pregnant for the first time. But when they went in for a routine ultrasound, they were devastated. A doctor told them their baby had serious birth defects and would probably be stillborn. One doctor after another suggested they should abort the baby. However, they were steadfast in their resolve to carry the baby to term. 15 years later, that baby, Philip Matthews, inspires parents faced with bearing a baby with birth defects that they will get through it and that they may have a baby like Philip. WTC's Richard Winham is speaking with Philip, as well as Santosh and Susan, who say that they see Philip as a miracle baby.
I never actually looked at the mirror. I never said, you know, why do I look this way to myself? I remember specifically me saying, God, when is my back going to be straight? That's the only thing I remember me saying about myself. And when other people are looking at me, like they, so many people were doing so in India and Nepal, most of the time I just look at them back and then go on my business. But yeah, most of the time it doesn't even bother me.
You have been given a greater burden than most of us because of your physical limitations. You can't do a lot of the things that you probably like to do at your age, right?
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't seem to affect your spirit. You don't get depressed about it, and it doesn't, you know, get you down.
You know, I can't play football for once. I can't. But I love seeing, you know, these football stars like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson. I love seeing those two play. I love seeing them play. And, you know, that helps me because, you know, I mean, one thing, I think they're really good leaders. You know, they control their huddle and all that. That kind of inspires me to, you know, be a good role model, be a good leader to those who are younger than me and those who are more inexperienced than I am. So I, even though I can't play, I'm actually learning some things, yeah.
But there's got to be times when you're mad, right? Why me? Why'd this happen to me? You never feel that way?
I've never actually thought about that, never. I just, you know, maybe I'd say, God, why do people laugh at me? You know, I'm just the same as they are. The only thing different is my face and my back. You know, I have the same heart, I have the same legs, I have the same hands. The only problem is my face. I have no problem with that. You know, when other people laugh at me and look at me, yeah, it hurts. But does it affect me in my daily life? No, it doesn't. I just go on.
You know the strange thing for me, Philip? At this point, now that I know you, I don't even see it anymore. Yeah? It's just you, you know. And I don't know if I don't think I'm unusual in that respect. I think when you get to know somebody fairly quickly, you forget what they look like, right? Because you're looking at the person, not at the outside, but the spirit. And I'm sure your friends do that too, right? Your friends probably don't even notice it, right? They just take you for who you are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're probably acting like in sixth grade, for example. Like, I had two of my friends who are now pretty much my closest ones. They were laughing with me, kind of having fun with me. But I didn't know about this until I was in seventh grade. They were trying to stay away from me. But I didn't know about this till my seventh grade. But after they heard my story and what I've been through, then they were like, oh. And they started, you know, helping me out. You know, see, if I missed anything from my teacher, they'd try helping me to catch up. Because, you know, I can't hear that well. And so they'd try helping me and catching me up. I love it. They're pretty much one of my best friends that I actually know. Now that I know them even more.
So and initially, they were just a little put off because you didn't look like everybody else. All kids are like that. But at some point, they stopped worrying about that, and they just started talking to you and getting to know you as a person, didn't they?
Yeah. Like, one of them actually found out I was pretty much the funniest guy he ever knew. Iran from Iran. Yeah. That's one of my favorite jokes.
You have a great sense of humor.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. I mean, you should watch him on stage.
When I'm up on stage, I love having fun. You know, some of the speakers out there, they're like doing all this stuff, and I'm like, why don't you have fun for once? You're up on stage giving us a message, yeah. But have some fun when you're doing a message.
So it strikes me that you don't really take yourself too seriously. You have the humor helps you deal with who you are.
Philip has learned to work with his deformity, like without his ear. You want to talk about your ear and how you were able to talk to people about your ear and
in the medical camps. I didn't have an eye or an ear, I'd show them. I'd show it to them. Hey, look, I have a fake ear. Anybody want to touch it? I'd show it to them. And one time, I did this in India, and the whole crowd went wild. They went wild.
He took off his ear.
Like, great God, it's crazy. It's crazy in a way, but I think I love it. I love it. I'm probably going to get a new one soon. Maybe next time I go to another church or maybe another event that Overgot Region's having, I'd probably ask someone to touch it. I have no problem.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
He's your best spokesperson, Santosh.
He is. He is. We let him loose, and he can talk. He's brought in a lot of supporters and partners, and Philip is the face of the organization.
Well, he's very disarming. His attitude is very disarming. What kind of reaction do you get from the people that you're working with, though? The people who are obviously very uncomfortable with all of this and don't understand why it happens and are scared by it almost, I think, right?
There are a lot of people who are scared by, and they won't even take a look at some of the images that we have. But I guess when people talk to Philip, I mean, they understand that there is a person behind that face. There is a soul, a living soul behind it. And I guess that's why, going back to, the time that when the doctors told us that, we've got to abort him, for us, there is a person in that body, mm-hmm. that needs to come out. And in life, this is what we show the world. I mean, when people talk to Philip and they see that there is a person behind all that deformity, there's a person who has feelings, who can make a difference. I mean, think about it. We were just talking the other day. Who would have guessed, everybody thought that he would be born dead. Everybody that we knew thought that he would be completely worthless or useless, so to speak. 15 years later, Philip has probably spoken to more than 10, 12 million people around the world through different media, encouraged a lot of people. He has inspired this organization and helped transform hundreds of lives. Who would have guessed that body,
right,
that was supposed to be born dead, would do all these things?
Well, and would contain that kind of spirit.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, who would have guessed that?
So let me take you back a second. So the doctors are telling you, Susan, that it's almost a... It's an impossibility for this being to live because of the problems with his stomach.
Yes.
How did that? Do you know how that resolved itself? What happened?
There's no by the time medical answer. Yeah.
By the time Philip was born, that had corrected itself?
We, you know, after we got that report, we had to go and at the time we told the doctor, no, we're not going to end the pregnancy. He said, okay, well, let's go and set you up with a cardiologist. Let them do a scan. Let's get a better idea of his heart. And then we'll meet back as a team and get your OB involved also, and then we'll make a decision at that point. So we set up a follow-up for a couple of more weeks. And when we saw the heart doctor, did his own scan of Philip's heart, and he told us that, you know, the gynecologist OB had told us that there was only one large hole, but he said there are so many small ones that the machine can't even count them.
And you're talking about his heart now?
His heart.
Yeah. Yes. So that was, you know, we were 5 months pregnant with him, and that's when we found that out. So we had that doctor's report, and he also asked us, are you planning to carry the pregnancy? Are you planning to go to full term? And I said, yes, we are. And he said, well, if the baby is born, I'll see you in the NICU. And we said, okay. And he also told us that, you know, sometimes the holes do close up on their own, but with the size of his and the extent of his, he said, I don't know what will happen. We'll just have to see. So we saw him, and then we went back to our doctor for the final meeting, and I was about 6 months pregnant at this time, and he had all these reports. So, you know, we believe in faith. We believe in the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. It is the positive thinking, but it's also that we have life and death in our tongue, in what we say and speak specifically. So it was after this that we were about 6 months pregnant and had all these other doctor reports, and we went back for the second ultrasound. And the doctor again told us, you know, I told you before that the stomach was not present, and that's what the life-threatening issue is. Of all the other problems that are there, he's just not going to make it, but are you going to carry the baby? He asked again, and we said, yes, we do not want to terminate the pregnancy. So he said, okay, let's do the scan, and he had all the other, the heart report and all this other labs and everything, data, and he just began the ultrasound, and, you know, the first thing he said was, I don't know where it came from, but the stomach is right there. It wasn't there before. I searched for it for a long time, and it wasn't there, but now it's there. And he told us, you know, all the other issues, you know, they were not life-threatening. This was the life-threatening issue. Your baby now has a chance to live.
So in some sense, I guess you feel as if you had a miracle baby, huh?
Well, in every sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there is no explanation for what happened. We have some of the most amazing doctors here, right here in Chattanooga.
Experience.
Pretty experienced, and their analysis were accurate in terms of everything else, you know. So we really don't know what happened to the stomach. And the other part is, you know, about his heart, you know, when he turned 1 year old, you know, they said that his heart is going into heart failure. He may need to have a open heart surgery and all that, but they didn't think he would survive that surgery. Same thing, you know, we went and started to pray, and, you know, in a few weeks, every single hole in his heart closed, and they have no idea how this happened, and they still don't know, you know. His heart doctor has released him from any heart-related conditions. A part of his brain is missing, called the corpus callosum. And they said he'll never walk or talk or, you know, be like the other normal children. But look at him now. I mean, he's a few months ago, we had another scan done. And
well, talking to him, it's obvious part of his brain is missing.
There you go.
At some point, inspired you to want to help others, having been through all this?
Yes. It was a miserable time in terms of going through surgeries. It was not easy. We had to go through a lot of surgeries, and we had some tremendous help locally from the Tennessee Craniofacial Center Foundation. So, you know, we had a lot of help here, and, you know, they helped us out with Philip, and we went through these surgeries. And through the process, we started finding out that there were children like Philip in other countries that had absolutely no access to surgeries. They had no idea what to do with a child born like this. And
Not to mention insurance, I imagine.
The only insurance that they have is, I guess, the grave. I mean, that's, you know, because a child born like this would never make it. Would not make it past the first week of being born, you know. So, but what we were able to do was we started to find out that there were a lot of people like Philip. And so early 2000, in the end of 2007, Susan and I decided to found Love Without Reason.
Over the next 5 years, Santosh Mathew spent thousands of dollars of his own money traveling to India 25 times, trying to convince doctors to join him in helping children born with severe birth defects in poor rural areas of India. In 2012, his funds exhausted, Santosh received a call from a doctor willing to help, but he needed funds. With the help of friends, Santosh was able to raise the money. Since then, he has helped facilitate 250 operations. You can find out more about the work he's doing and the organization he and his family continue to run single-handedly on their website, lovewithoutreason.org. For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.